As we begin today's broadcast of Growing in Grace, we do so beginning a look at the book of Proverbs. We invite you to join us today as Pastor Steve Ballantyne gives us an insight into this amazing book.
He is not offering us in Proverbs guarantees, but principles that accord with God's will and are generally true. Proverbs focus on the rule, not the exception.
Once again, welcome to Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne from San Gabriel Community Church. As mentioned at the beginning of our program, we're moving into a season in the Proverbs. As we begin our time today, we do so with a foundational look at this wonderful book. Just exactly what is God promoting? Are these promises that we need to hinge our life upon? Are they things that we need to do in order to find ourselves in true happiness with God and acceptance with Him? What is the book of Proverbs? Here's Pastor Steve with today's edition of Growing in Grace with an understanding of this book.
We begin today a series in the study, the book of Proverbs. It is a study that I have wanted to do for a long time. I have, for many reasons, just been, intimidated, scared, if you will, to do it. And we'll walk through some of that. It's a challenging book to preach through, but one that I have loved for many, many years. It is a book that is personally precious to me. I, as a high schooler, was challenged to read a proverb a day. As most of you know, there are 31 chapters, and most of our months have 31 days, so it corresponds easily to make that part of your devotional life. It was a very easy habit to get into as you're trying to establish a devotional life, to read a proverb a day. There's always something that seems so pertinent, so valuable for the day that's in front of you. So it's an easy book to meditate on and to mull over as the day goes on. Each and every one of us, every single one of us is on a path. We're on a journey. And while in some sense it's true that there are as many paths and journeys as there are people, there are categories that Scripture creates for us where we're divided into two groups. And wisdom literature, in particular Proverbs, does this for us. It says that every single one of us in this room is on a path. Every single one of us is either on the path of wisdom or the path of folly. We are pursuing wisdom or we are pursuing foolishness. Those are the only two options. There's not a third path. And so we come to Proverbs and we recognize, I think most of us who are in Christ would say, I want to be on the path of wisdom. I want to live according to wisdom and not folly. I want to choose wisdom and not foolishness. I want to make that the path of my life. And so Proverbs is an incredibly helpful book for us to make sure that we are on the right path. As we contemplate, why a study in the book of Proverbs, just a couple of reasons. I'll go through these quickly. We've talked about these before, but part of it, our desire is to preach the whole counsel of God. And while we are New Testament believers, the New Testament is built upon the foundation of the Old Testament. And the greater our understanding of the Old Testament, the greater our understanding of the New Testament. The greater our understanding of the Old Covenant, the greater our understanding of the New Covenant and of Christ and of the Gospel. And so we want to constantly be looking at the whole counsel of God. This, as an interesting note, at least to me, since 2002, we have now covered 10 books of the New Testament, and this will be our 10th book in the Old Testament, 20 different books of the Bible that we've covered. Actually, one of those series in the Old Testament I'm counting as one series, but it was all 12 minor prophets. So we have sought to very purposefully balance that study out to make sure that we are in both Testaments. The Old Testament is the Bible that Jesus carried. The Old Testament is the Bible that Jesus quoted when facing temptation. It's so a part of his thinking and his instruction. When he teaches, you hear Old Testament themes. When he teaches, you hear wisdom themes, themes from Proverbs, the two paths, the wise and the foolish. You see in the book of John, in Luke, Peter, Paul, all of these authors are quoting Proverbs and the Old Testament. The other very real reason and practical reason to look at Proverbs as a church is because we are in desperate need in the age that we live in for the wisdom from God. We have more information than ever, but we lack wisdom as a culture, as a society. In 1900, I read this week that in 1900, it said that we doubled our information, the amount of information and knowledge we had doubled every 100 years. By 1950, the knowledge that we had, the amount of information we had doubled every 25 years. Today, the amount of information we have doubles every 12 months. The amount of information in the world doubles every year. It's thought, it's believed, it's proposed that we are not far in the future from doubling the amount of knowledge that exists, the amount of information that exists every 12 hours. We live in an age of information. We live in an age where much information and knowledge is out there. But knowledge is not the same as wisdom. To know something is different than to be wise about something. We need wisdom. There are many voices in the world, and we live in a world where we need to hear the voice of God in a way that instructs us how to live in our homes, how to function in marriage, how to function as parents, how to live at work, how to live in our city, in our state, in our country. We need God's wisdom. And I want this morning just to introduce the book to us by looking at the introduction, verses 1 to 7. That's my goal. We'll see how well we do. This section divides itself easily into three parts. First, verse 1 is the title. Verses 2 to 6 is the purpose. And verse 7 is the motto or the theme. The title, the purpose, and the theme. So let's look at verse 1, the title. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. And I just want to make two observations about this. Actually, the second one is going to be quite extended, but two observations with six or eight subpoints. So hang with me. But the first is this, to ask the question, who is communicating to us? Who is communicating to us? Who is the author? And we have this explicit statement in verse 1. These are the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Immediately we're placed into an historical context, a person that we know from the pages of the Old Testament, a king that we are familiar with. He is Solomon, the great king, the son of the great king David, and he rules over Israel. If you look at verse 7, the fear of the Lord, notice that in most of your English translations, the word Lord is in all capital letters. That is how the English designates the proper name of God, if you will, the name Yahweh, the covenant name of God. So this is written by a man whom we know who lives in Israel, who's in relationship to the God of the universe in a very personal way. This God who has a covenant relationship with his people and with this king. It's not shocking to someone familiar with the Old Testament narrative that Solomon would be the author of this anthology of wisdom. You remember the story, you can find it in 1 Kings chapter 3 and 4, that God comes to Solomon, offers him anything he wants, and Solomon says, I want wisdom. And God says, this is a good thing that you've asked, and he grants him wisdom. In fact, he's said to be the wisest man on the earth. People came from all over to learn from his wisdom, to gain insight and understanding into problems from this man that was known to be so wise. In chapter 4 of 1 Kings, it tells us that he wrote over 3,000 Proverbs. His authorship is attested to not just in verse 1 of chapter 1, but in chapter 10, verse 1, we're told again that this is the beginning of the Proverbs of Solomon. And again, in chapter 25, verse 1, we're told that Solomon is authoring these Proverbs, and that's a group of Proverbs that's gathered by Hezekiah some 250 years after the death of Solomon. But Solomon is not the only author in the book. He is the primary author, and thus is the title, the one who compiles all of this wisdom, this anthology, if you will, of wisdom. He gives that the title, but we're told in chapter 22, verse 17, all the way through the end of verse 24, there's two sections of Proverbs there that are attributed to the wise men. These are the Proverbs of the wise men. Chapter 30 is attributed to a man named Agur, and chapter 31 to Lemuel. And we don't know who any of these men are. These are just men who had contributed wisdom, observations on the world under the inspiration of God and were compiled later in this anthology that constitutes the Proverbs. The book, on a broad scope, breaks down in two sections, chapters 1 to 9 and chapters 10 through 31. Chapters 1 to 9 establish the foundation upon which a wise life is lived. So the Proverbs, those kind of pithy sayings that we know as Proverbs, they don't really begin in full until chapter 10. And then you get into this list of proverb after proverb after proverb. But if you start in chapter 10 with the formal presentation of the Proverbs, and you don't build those on the foundations of 1 to 9, you will miss the point. Chapters 1 to 9 establish the foundation, and the picture here is of the king grabbing his son by the shoulders, the prince, the future king of the land, a father to his son, and staring him in the eyes and saying, "This is of utmost importance. Listen to this. Heed my words. This is how to live a wise life, a good life." And that establishes the foundation for all the Proverbs to be profitable in your life, is the foundation that he lays in verse chapters 1 to 9. And then chapters 10 through 31 tells us how that wise life is lived out. Proverb after proverb, hundreds of them, telling us what it looks like. If you've decided to build your life on this foundation, what does it look like in everyday life to live wisely? Of course, ultimately, the author is God. And he's working through these men and these women to offer us the wisdom that comes from his heart to his people. God's words through God's people to God's people. Now, the second question to ask in verse 1 is, how is he communicating to us? And the simple answer to that, you can see it here, these are the Proverbs of Solomon. That's what makes this book unique in the whole canon of Scripture. Other books contain Proverbs, but none are a collection of Proverbs that amount even close to what's in this book that's in front of us. Now, what is a proverb? A proverb is, the word itself means a comparison. That's the idea, to be like or to represent. So a proverb is a comparison, a representation, a brief picture of a big reality in life. Virtually every culture in the ancient world, every culture in the modern world has some version of Proverbs. In Don Quixote, Cervantes says this, it's actually a helpful definition of a proverb. A proverb is a short sentence that's drawn from long experience. It's a short sentence drawn from long experience. It's a simple observation that's drawn from observing life over an extended period of time. We have a number of these even in our own culture. Fish and visitors, they stink after 3 days. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. If at first you don't succeed, try again. It's easier to ask for forgiveness than to get permission. If you're going to be dumb, you better be tough. Mark Twain, it is better to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Franklin Roosevelt, it is better to swallow words than to have to eat them later. You see quotes like this on motivational posters in offices, pithy sayings that are intended to motivate. I prefer the demotivational posters. if you're familiar with those. Mediocrity, it's a picture of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It takes less time and people don't usually notice until it's too late. Consulting, if you're not part of the solution, there's good money to be made in prolonging the problem. Compromise, let's agree to respect each other's views no matter how wrong yours may be. Pithy statements intended to summarize long-term observations, to communicate truth about life in short little statements that are memorizable and motivating. Now, biblical proverbs bear some resemblance to these, but they are more, and this is so important, they are more than witty tidbits and moralisms. They reflect the wisdom of God to the people of God, giving instruction on how to live a life that is pleasing to God. The Proverbs point us to God. They point us to Jesus. They point us to godliness. They point us to righteousness. They're not simply moral tidbits. And we'll look at this, and this is where I want to make just a series of observations. Six things that will help us understand the Proverbs as we read them together and study them together. The first I made reference to last week is understanding Hebrew parallelism. The primary way that Hebrew poetry is put together is through parallelism. In English, we think of rhyme and meter. The Hebrews use parallel thoughts. And just a few examples of these. There's differing kinds of these in each category, but these are the broad. There's synonymous parallelism. And this is where one line is related in different words to the line that follows. So we have this in chapter 1, verse 2, where he says the same thing twice, basically. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. So for the sake of emphasis, the second line repeats in different words the thought or the principle in the first line. It piles up words and synonyms for the sake of emphasis. There's also, and this is really a significant portion of the middle of Proverbs, antithetical or contrasting parallelism. In chapter 10, verse 1, just to give you a couple examples. Listen to the contrast. A wise son makes a glad father, but, and that's a common word for contrast in these, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. You see another one in chapter 10, verse 5. He who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. So it'll give two lines of thought, making one grand truth, but doing this by way of contrast with one another. That's antithetical parallelism. And then third is synthetic. And that's where the second line furthers the thought of the first. Let me just give you a couple examples of these. Sometimes it's the second line is a consequence of the first. Chapter 20, verse 4. The sluggard does not plow in the autumn. He will seek at harvest and have nothing. So there you can almost hear the therefore, right? The consequence. The sluggard does not plow in the autumn. Therefore, when harvest comes, he will seek and have nothing. Sometimes it's an application of the first, chapter 20, verse 19. Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a simple babbler. So it's telling you, if this is true, that slanderers go about sharing secrets, then you should avoid this kind of person. Sometimes synthetic parallelism is presented as a result. The second line is the result of the first. A very familiar one to us is chapter 3, verse 6. In all your ways acknowledge him. What's next? And he will direct your paths. It's the result. So observing this parallelism, we'll reference it time and again as we go through this, is a helpful place for us to begin understanding Hebrew poetry. And we'll see that each kind of these as we move through. The second observation to make is this. So the first is Hebrew parallelism. The second, the Proverbs are deeply theological. This is crucial. The Proverbs are deeply theological. Yes, they're practical. Yes, they point to how to live in everyday life, but they're pointing out how to live in everyday life under the rule of God. They're not random moral tidbits. They are given to us by God. And just of the many themes that are presented to us theologically in Proverbs, let me just highlight a couple that are, I think, foundational. One, Proverbs presents God as the creator of the world, and he created the world with wisdom. Chapter 3, verse 19, chapter 8, verse 27 to 29. God is the creator of the world, and he created this world in wisdom. The second thought, God rules the world in wisdom. So this is forming the theological foundation for these nuggets of truth, is that God created this world in wisdom, he governs this world in wisdom, and then he says, I am going to make to my people available this wisdom with which I have created and governed the world. We'll see time and again that Proverbs points to deep theological truths beyond the moral tidbit. Second, or thirdly, and I've alluded to this already, but Proverbs presents to us two paths. We are constantly presented with the choice between two paths and only two paths: the wise path that leads to life and the foolish path that leads to death. And the picture of the path is incredibly helpful to fight against the contemporary notion that we can compartmentalize our spiritual lives. We live on a path. Whether we are at work or at home or at church, there is no dividing our life between the sacred and the secular. We are on one path or the other. We are not on one path on the weekends and another path during the week. And wisdom literature, the Proverbs, force us to make a decision about the path of our lives. This is what Christ does in the Sermon on the Mount. He teaches all of these things, and then he comes to the end. He says, now listen, there are two men. There's the wise man who builds his house on the rock. There's the foolish man who builds his house on the sand. What's he doing there? He's saying, in all that I've taught, you have a choice to make. You follow after the path of wisdom or foolishness. Those are your options. To say this another way, God is not just concerned that you had your quiet time this morning. He cares whether or not you cheat on your test in the afternoon. God is not just concerned that you are gracious and kind at church. He cares that you are considerate and kind at work. And Proverbs brings this together and says, listen, there are these paths that we choose. And we can't say, well, on weekends I'm on this path of godliness, and during the week God's unconcerned with that. Proverbs says, God has created the whole world and the whole order, and he governs it in wisdom, and you need to constantly, day after day, in every area of life, walk in wisdom. Foolishness, folly, is much more than immaturity. It is a failure to see the world as God has ordered it. It's a failure to understand that God is to be feared and puts you on a, and foolishness puts us on a path of destruction and death. And wisdom is more than intelligence. It's living a properly ordered life under the rule of God, discerning between right and wrong, and living in a way that leads to life.
This is Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne from San Gabriel Community Church. Closing out our time together today, we would extend to you an invitation to join us for worship here at San Gabriel Community Church. Sunday services are at 9 a.m. We are meeting outside, and you can also live stream our service at sgcclivestream.org. Now, the easiest way to get more information about all that's going on here at the church in light of our current cultural situation is to simply go to our website, sangabrielcommunity.org. That's sangabrielcommunity.org. Now, as you visit our website, you will find an archive of past sermons, messages available to listen to at any time, information about us, who we are, what we believe, and why. Pastor Steve's blog is available from our website, and information about our school, San Gabriel Christian School. Again, you can go to sangabrielcommunity.org or give us a call, 626-656-1000. That's 626-656-1000. 656-1000. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you next time we get together for another broadcast of Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne. Growing in Grace is the ministry of San Gabriel Community Church.